Hi, Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you, Sharon. I forgot that myself. I'll never forget Dakota, though. I don't even have to go to purgatory now. I've been there. I had one exciting moment when my wife walked out among the buffalo. I said, pet the big one. I'd like to thank the board, the well-oiled machine of the board, the flawless precision board, and for inviting us and for showing us a wonderful, wonderful time. This has just been incredible now. It's been great. We've had a wonderful time. I've eaten too much, but I expected to do that. I do that regularly. And it was so good to see Sharon and what's her husband's name? Sandy, yeah, that's right. I remember everybody's name till I got to a microphone, and they go, pfft. But it was good to see them again. I've run across some people. I've been looking at a face back there that I saw in Huntsville just a while back. And so if any of you that heard me recently, don't move your lips, please. I hate that when you move your lips with me. That annoys me. Especially when you get ahead of me. That really ticks me off. Because then I can't remember where the hell I am. I was someplace so a while back. And this guy, his Al-Anon, was sitting in the front row. And he couldn't remember what he was saying. He said, what was I saying? And she told him. Al-Anon slip! Al-Anon slip! Mine just goes, I say, what was I saying? She goes, I don't know. That's called a black belt smile. The Mona Lisa was an Al-Anon. Always like it when we come together so I can introduce her as my Al-Anon. You know how to introduce us? Have you met my alcoholic? Sit up, boy. Sit up, sit up, sit up. Tell them how long you've been sober. Weird people. Weird people. Did you ever watch them drink? Oh. Of course, I don't like social drinkers anyway. I don't think they should be allowed to drink. That's my personal opinion. I say, give them a Coke and slap them in the face. That's good enough for them. You know? Did you ever drink with them? Social drinkers? You know, you take the cap off, they say, I'll get it. You don't want to drink with people like that. Of course, Al-Anons are the worst social drinkers in the world anyway, God. You know what she did the other night? I'm not telling her. She had her, half a glass of wine, really boozing it up, you know. And she poured a little more, and then she went, I'm going to throw up when I say this. She poured it back in the bottle. I said, that's the most disgusting thing I have ever seen. She just says, never mind. One time about 4 or 5 years ago, I was driving my Al-Anon and these other four. Pat was talking up in L.A. somewhere. We stopped at a restaurant for dinner. And you should have watched that. The guy comes over the counter and says, would you like a cocktail before dinner? It became decision time. Do you want one? No, I don't know. I'll have one if you have one. How about you? Will you have one? I said, what the hell's going on here? Did you ever have to make a decision? My guy throw the towel over the arm. I go, let's go. Three, right here, right here. The best, though, the one, I don't remember what she said exactly, but she says, the waiter up, do you have kumquat daiquiris? He says, no, we don't have any of those. And she says, never mind. Oh, I didn't let that go by. I said, Sarah, will you look behind the bar? I said, there's 500 bottles back there. What the hell's the difference whether or not they hit me on it? Do you remember that? Huh? Don't you think you had a few too many? I said, you had a few too few. That's your problem, lady. Because that's not the way I drink, baby.
I love to drink. I love booze. I love sour mash bourbon whiskey the best. But I like it all, you know. I like scotch and brandy and rum's good. Oh, I like rum and gin. I like it. Vanilla extract, I'm not real crazy about vanilla. But if that's what we're drinking, what the hell, you know? If that's what you have, I'm drinking it, you know what I mean? You'll have to admit it has bouquet. You know, for like 3 days. Oh, I love booze. I love to drop some shooters down there. Have about 7 or 8. Get all dressed up pretty, huh? Remember that? Remember looking in the mirror before you went out the door? Oh, those lucky devils. Here I come, you know. Never came home that way. That's kind of drunk I am, you know. Lapel was gone, you know. My blood all over everything. Somebody would throw up on me. But when I went out that door, boy, I'll never forget that feeling glancing in that mirror looking good. And I was going to go out among my people. Here comes Cliff. And I would have fun. Remember that? Fun. Oh, you don't want to say that in an Al-Anon meeting. They don't like that. Now, Jim this morning said God told him, and even said it wrong, see? God said, have fun, Jim. See, Al-Anons have fun. We have fun. You know, you say that in AA meeting, all their eyes glaze over. Yeah, a little slobber runs out of the corner of the mouth. Because you're the only people in the world who know exactly what I mean. Huh? Remember it? Does it give you goose pimples? Fun! Yeah, being beaten to a pulp and go to jail. Fun! You know, finding your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning. Remember that? With you in it. Fun! I almost died of it. If I'd have had one more good time, you'd have a different speaker tonight. You know what I mean? Because I couldn't resist it, could you? I could not stay away from it. I was like old Buck, that dog in the Call of the Wild. I could not resist fun. Even that last couple of years when everything was crappy, remember? Oh, I'd get up in the morning and call Ralph for an hour and a half. Ralph. There's just nothing left but you and Ralph. Get up, get cleaned up, and go to work. Always went to work. I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm a doer. And I was a school teacher. I always like to say that when there's young mothers in the audience. They clasp their children to them. You know? Wouldn't a lot of your parents like to know that, Sammy? And I'd go to work and I'd talk about honor and justice and truth to high school classes all day. Sick, dying. Worked for a jerk who was out to get me, and he'd get me all day. Got me. Then I'd go home and I was married to her. She'd had her sense of humor surgically removed many years before. She was in the terminal stages of pre-Al-Anonism, you know. Had one of those Al-Anon tics before they get here. We live in this marine town. We couldn't let her go downtown doing that. You know, she'd get in a lot of trouble then. And Jim told Al-Anon, you know, that irritates my wife. It irritates me too. People make Al-Anon jokes. If you're going to tell a joke about somebody, it's like saying an Al-Anon joke. It's like you mean a pre-Al-Anon is what you mean. You have to ought to preface that and say, this pre-Al-Anon said, you know what I mean? Like me telling a joke about a member of Alcoholics Anonymous who was drunk. We wouldn't think that was funny. A real Al-Anon joke is how to tell the difference between an alcoholic and a dog. The dog quits whining when you let it back in the house. That's an Al-Anon joke. Yeah. They think that's funny. Didn't amuse me when I heard it. And I, you know, I just had this day where I started sick and went the rest of the day, and I was married to her, and we had all these long-haired dope fiend children, you know, and I'd go in the bedroom, you know, get that pistol out. Remember that? You know, remember the pistol? Just to see if the barrel was still cold. You know? And just then old Jerry would come by and say, hey, Cliff, let's go have some fun. Oh, And I was gone again. Yeah? I know the last 5,999 times I got in trouble. I know that. But tonight, it's going to be fun again. And I chased that dream forever, almost into the gates of insanity and death, you know? I'd met Pat in college. She was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And you're looking to be abused. Here's your boy right here. I volunteer. And we had a dreaded dual disease of alcoholism and Catholicism. And we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes, seemed like to me anyway. Every time I came out of a blackout, who's that, for God's sakes, you know? And they're all right when they're little, but they grow, you know. And the years went by, and we had five of them. And the older they got, the weirder they got. And the older I got, the weirder I got, and the weirder she got. And we were just a weird bunch. And you know, if you're new, you know, we're going to tell you these things. When you're new, we lie to you. Hell, it's worth it. You know, we'll tell you it's about not drinking. That's what we'll tell you. And you'll believe that. I mean, that's why I came here, to stop drinking. That's why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember my sponsor said, oh, yeah, sure, it's about not drinking. Come over here with me. You know, sit right here by me. Then he said, oh, we do have this book. And a few days later, he pointed out there were some steps in it and that kind of thing. But it's, you know, I'm going to tell you here tonight, it's not about not drinking, you know. Because I went without drinking one time, without a drinking and without a program. I went 15 years one time. And I don't recommend it. I mean, it's still a stinking world out there filled with people that are out to get you, huh? And it's a cold, cruel, vicious, rotten world out there. But when I turned 16, I took a drink and the world changed, you know? And I changed and you changed and I chased that forever. And I'm a fun drinker and I had fun. But I had blackouts too. Did you have any of those? I never had a good blackout. I never woke up in the morning and found I'd helped the little sisters of the poor all night or something like that. You know? Always a lot of trouble when I'm still waiting to meet somebody. Said, oh, I had delightful blackouts. Yes, thank you. You know, I've never met anybody in AA yet. And I have these blackouts. And unfortunately for me, I was a fighting alcoholic. I love to fight when I'd rather do that than anything. Anything. I just macho. Any other macho fighting alcoholics here? And I would just fight anybody anytime. Which is too bad because I'm no good at it, you know. And in my case, the moment I would get enough sauce to become brave, I would lose my muscle coordination. And you get seriously damaged doing that, I'll guarantee you. But I would do it over and over and over and over. I remember one time in Long Beach, four other guys and I had come down from Bakersfield, California, down to Long Beach to have fun. And I woke up in this flea bag hotel, and I thought I was blind. I had bled face down on this pillow all night, seeing it dried. So when I come up, the pillow came with me, you know. I was smothering in there. I was in a panic, you know. And there was a sink in the corner. We start throwing water on this thing, almost drowned then. We finally got it kind of semi-damp, and I'm like, got that pillow. I looked in the mirror on the dresser. I said, put the pillow back. You know, oh, I looked like Quasimodo, you know. And I did that right up to the end. And that's called the second step. When you do that over and over, that's the second step. But after Pat and I were married, I became a school teacher, and I taught up in the San Joaquin Valley there. Looks a lot like Dakota. And then we moved to Oceanside, California in 1961, and I accepted a job at Oceanside High there. And Oceanside's just 30 miles north of San Diego. And if I may put a little commercial in here, next year, that's where the international is going to be. Some of your people are wearing shirts around here that are illegal, but it's fine. That's this little button here. It says, I'll see you in San Diego. It's going to be the greatest one ever. Pat and I are both working on it. Everybody there has been working on it for a year already. It's going to be magnificent. And we hope you come, because it's a great place to have a convention, I'll tell you. And we're waiting for you. We want all this word, for God's sake, show up. And we moved to Oceanside, just 30 miles north of San Diego, and I took a teaching job there at Oceanside High. And, my drinking progressed and surprised nobody in this room. You know, but as I say, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm one of these guys that has to do 10 times more than you to prove I'm half as good. I don't know if anybody identifies with that. That's it. One guy said a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that in an Al-Anon meeting. They don't think that's funny. And so I always did the job. Always did the job better than anybody else. I'd to prove that I was better than that. First time I went to Alcoholics Anonymous was in 1965, for God's sakes. And another guy and another surfer and I, I'm the oldest surfer in the world. Kids there love me. Help Mr. Roach back on his board. There you go. You know. But another guy is a surfer and I, another teacher, we got this surfboard shop down on the beach there in Oceanside. And, right at the end of the strand, right sitting on the water, can you imagine? The mayor of the town had this old building. He wanted to keep it up. So he gave us the building to use for this surf shop. And we were going to rent surfboards and fix surfboards and give surf lessons and make $1 million and never have to teach again. And we had to fix the building all up. I remember the windows were broken. We got it all fixed up and we got a refrigerator. 4 or 5 months later, we got some surfboards. No big hurry there. Okay. Give you an idea of us at that time. We had these two chaise lounge chairs. Huh? Can you imagine? Having a place on the beach, sitting on the sand. And we became sunset connoisseurs. We used to measure sunsets by martinis. Looks like about an 8 tonight, Woody. Best one we ever had. We had a 15 martini sunset one time. You should have seen it. It was glorious. And the sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. Remember that? But we did real well with this shop during the summer. But in 65, February of 65, I went down to repair a board. We were closed. Of course, it was freezing cold. And we were back teaching school again. And I had a hangover on Sunday morning.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I was thirsty. Honest? Yeah. And I went to the refrigerator because I was not a morning drinker in 1965. I was a weekend drinker. Took Wednesday off, remember? Just drink on weekend. I think, had I been with the Ann Abuse yet? I remember one time with Ann Abuse. Pat will tell you about it tomorrow. She had this formula that was going to protect me. And I wouldn't drink till Friday. But I always drank on Thursday. And all the neighborhood kids would say, it's Thursday, let's go and watch Mr. Roach glow. But I was not a morning drinker. I had never had a morning drink in 65, as far as I remember. But anyway, I opened the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke, because I was so thirsty. And my buddy had been there the night before, and he left about, maybe this much vodka in a half a pint. And there was some orange juice in the refrigerator, and I thought, hey, that would hit the spot, a little screwdriver. There's only enough for a little light one, and I mixed it up and drank it, and went about my business, and I'm standing on this board. And about 20 minutes later, my mind talk to me. I like to watch the newcomers go. How'd he know? Huh? I want to tell you if you're new. My mind talks to me every day. But I don't listen. No, no, no. I have met the enemy. He lives here. Only enemy I have in the world lives right in here. All of them. And one of them that morning said, shame on you, Cliff, shame. You finished Woody's booze off like that. You ought to be ashamed of yourself. Why don't you go up to the liquor store? You're ahead of me. And get old Woody a pint. That's the kind of guy I am. That afternoon, I got old Woody a fifth. And I ended up drunk. Remember when we would say we were drunk? My dad used to call it bory-eyed. One eye goes one way. And I crawled home. I was just a mess. I screwed the board up. The shop was a mess. And I was a mess. And the next morning I said to Pat, I don't know what's happening to me. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. I got to do something about my drinking. And she had cut this thing out of the paper about the A&A. Don't know why she thought to do that. And I did. I just called AA because I wanted to do something about my drinking. That's the only time I ever called AA sincerely, including this time. And old Stan came out and got me and took me to some AA meetings. And I realized I'd made a grievous error in judgment. They're just little meetings, and there weren't many of them in the Oceanside Carlsbad. Little meetings around a table. Now, I got to tell you, I've been educated way beyond my intelligence. Okay? I have degrees, you know, on my degrees. I don't even count them. I just stack them. And these people seem to have the IQ of an orange. But the third night, this one guy said, well, we keep it simple here. I said, no! Honest to God! Really, Hiram? You could have fooled me. Then a sign on the wall said, you ready? First things first. Oh, good! Always do third things first, don't you? Right next to it, that a sign said, think. Oh, okay, yeah. So I would go to these meetings and I would whine and snivel. And after a while, somebody in the meeting would say, hey, you're whining and sniveling. Well, they didn't know that I was sensitive, too, you know. And they would hurt my feelings, so I would punish that meeting. I would not go back there again. And after a while, I ran out of meetings to punish. You know, there weren't that many. And then I would go to the speaker meeting there in Oceanside. Little meeting, maybe 40, 50 people every Sunday evening. And I didn't go every Sunday. I wasn't that bad. And so I would wait out in the car for the meeting to start. I didn't want to hang around with you, you know. And so I'd wait for the meeting to start, and I'd skulk in the back door and get that loser chair. You know, the one where somebody else had it. I'd say, give me that chair. That's my chair. And then I would sit in the back of the room and listen and judge the speakers. You can imagine what I learned, huh? I'd just sit in the back there all scrunched up. Sounded to me like everybody's name was Clem. You know? And he'd been out of bib overalls about an hour and a half, and his wife's name was Martha. And their problem had been drinking. That was their problem. They were good, decent, happy, sincere, worthwhile folk their whole lives, but they drank too much. And so they'd come here to the A&A and put the plug, and they had returned to being good, decent, sincere, happy, worthwhile folk again. They had been rehabilitated. You know the word? Rehabilitated. My hero in 65 was a guy named Eldridge Cleaver. He was a black militant terrorist. That was my politics in 1965. Blow it up or burn it down, I didn't really give a shit which, you know. I was for peace. And if you weren't for peace, I'd kill you. Or at least beat hell out of you, you know. And Eldridge had given this great speech a few months earlier about the prison system in California, about how they were always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they'd never known? He had never been rehabilitated. You can't rehabilitate somebody who has never been rehabilitated. That's how I felt in the A&A. See, you guys, evidently, you and Clem and Martha and your ilk, at some point in your wretched lives, you had been all right. I have never been all right. Ever. I was cuckoo when I was 4 years old. Now, if you're new, not everybody in AA is like me. Thank God. You know, I know lots of people who come in here who are relatively adjusted people, but booze got their lives screwed up. Not, I would guess just, you know, from the years of experience, maybe 60% are like me, so I have somebody to identify with. You know, but I mean, when I was 4 years old, I can remember this clearly. We lived on the Speedway in Venice, California, and I used to stand out there and wait for cars to come. Little tyke. When a car would come, I'd go. Then like a little soldier, he's supposed to, I'd wait for another one. You know, people come driving along, say, oh, look at the little boy, what the hell is that? I didn't know how to do this yet, you know. If I could have done that, that's what I would have done. Because that's how I felt when I was 4 years old. I don't know about you. But I lived on the edge of psychosis my whole life. Do you know what I mean? I mean, just one step either way and take him away. And I was filled with hostility, and I was filled with anger, and I was filled with resentment, and I was filled... I lived my life getting even. And I don't know what you were like. I have no idea. This is my story, and it's the only story I have, and it's the story I tell. You made me nothing like me. But in my case, I had a black ball down in the middle of my belly. And it was there when I was 4 years old, and I hadn't had a drink yet. And on a good day, the ball was about the size of a softball. And on a bad day, it was about the size of a basketball. And I don't care what the size was. It ruled my life. Every action I ever took, every reaction I ever had, every thought I ever had was generated and controlled by that black ball down in the middle of my belly. And it lived there all the time. And when I was 16 years old, I found a secret. I found that after I drank about 40 minutes, I would disengage whatever lobe of the brain was connected to the black ball. And then for like maybe 8 minutes, everything was all right. A lot of times right after that, it all went downhill. But in a 24-hour period, I was assured of 8 minutes of peace. And if you would have stopped me on the street and said, "What's serenity?" I would have said, "Well, it's about 8 minutes, 40 minutes into my drinking, because that's the only serenity I had ever known." And then, you know, if I give a PI talk to the Rotary Club or somebody, I don't tell them about the 8 minutes. They look at you funny. Earth people do not understand everything, do they? You went to jail all those... You were beaten to a pulp 8,000 times. You wrecked 35... For 8 minutes. But I can tell you because, you know, maybe you had an hour. I don't know. And it suddenly occurred to me one night in one of those meetings that they wanted me to give up the 8 minutes to hang around with Clem and Martha. Oh, no. So I saluted AA and went on my way. And the next 5 years was dreadful. I would be drunk for like 2 years. And then I would come into AA for like 40 days. Then I'd be drunk for a year and a half, and I'd come into AA for 20 days. One time I came in, another year and a half, one day, I came in the afternoon one time about 4 o'clock, and old Don the barber, who's dead now, and these other three guys quadro-stepped me. You ever been quadro-stepped? They get on all four sides of you. You know, just woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Oh, I got the message that day. That's the best I've ever had it, I think. You know, and I levitated out of the building. And I went over to Big John's house, my buddy Big John. He was worse than me. And I pounded on the door and I said, "John, we're alcoholics and we have to go to AA. Big John says, "Okay." Just missed it by 3 weeks. And just a fifth short. And he's a great big guy. Led him to the meeting that night, you know. And became his sponsor. And the next day we both got drunk. Oh, remember Big John? I got him out of jail about 2 months later. He had done, you know, some minor thing. He'd thrown his wife through the window or something. I don't remember. But you know how they always arrest you? You don't have any shoes on or any shirt. You know, just pants. And I went down and got him out of the clink in San Diego there. And I got his shirt down. And somebody had thrown up on his chest. And so we cleaned him up and got some shoes on him. And we're coming back down, going back up to Oceanside. We're going right down by the Torrey Pines Golf Course. You've seen that. You can play there if you come out there. Hey. We were coming down the golf course there, and I'm telling John about alcoholism. See, I'd gone to some meetings. I told him it's a twofold disease, physical allergy, mental obsession. But I wish I'd have taped that. It was terrific. John was touched. Tears in his eyes. He big guy, pat me on the back and the neck. And he said, "Boy, good to have a friend like you, Cliff, somebody to tell you the truth." "It's okay, John." He said, "Why don't you pull in George's here? We'll have a drink." I said, "Okay." And on and on and on it went. But as I said, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I went to work. I did the job. Principal, I taught speech among other classes. Principal called me. I know it sounds funny to hear that, but sometimes I sit in there and they go. But the principal called me in one day. He did a lot of that. And he had gotten this flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament, which was being held at San Diego State College, just 30 miles down the road, as I told you. And he said, "You know, that ought to be good for some of your students. Why don't you try that?" I didn't know anything about it, so I took an hour and taught them what I knew. About eight of them, maybe. We went down to this damn speech tournament down there at San Diego State. We were amazed when we got there. There were like 50 schools participating in this tournament. There were like 500 contestants. They're big deals. And the girls were in these gorgeous dresses, and the boys had three-piece suits with vests and ties. We're in Levi's. And they butchered us. You know, we didn't know what we were doing. They killed us. They slaughtered. We didn't win one round. I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't like to lose. It ticks me off to lose. So I go in the coach's room. There's about 20 of them in there, and they're just compadres. They're buddies, pals. They've been doing this for years and years and years, and they snubbed me, it seemed to me. So I hung around all day. You know how we are. So they could snub me more that way. One guy there really bothered me. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. Did you see the Al-Anon Jim's hair this morning? I wanted to punch him right in the face. He's got a lot of it. Did you see that little line? Oh. I just see nine barbers standing around him going, "You're all right. I can see myself there." Yeah. Just a minute. But it was gray. One of those gray manes. You know, not a hair out of place. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him. You know, he had a $1,000 suit on. And this jerk, about 2 in the afternoon, suddenly turns to me and says, "Where are you from?" God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, "Oceanside." He said, "Oh, where's that?" 30 miles up the road. Where's that? I don't know what you're like, but he gave me a resentment. So I went back to Oceanside High and I built a speech team. I didn't just build this. I built a juggernaut speech team. I built the damnest speech team you ever saw. And that ain't easy. You got a drink when you do that. I mean, the other teacher's on 4 o'clock. I'm up there 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. I'm in their faces, baby. I'm coaching. Guy next door used to say, "I love to watch them leave in your room wiping the spit off their glasses." Oh, angry man. And the way I do it, I don't eat all day either. Don't eat a thing. Drink about 400 cups of coffee. Huh? See, I don't drink all day. I wait. Much better that way, isn't it? Drink 400 cups of coffee and stay pissed off. The reporter said to my student one time, "What's the secret of your coach's success?" The kid said, "Terror." And he wasn't lying, was he, honey? And I finished with that last kid in the evening. "Good night, Mr. Rush." "Yeah, get out of here!" And meanwhile, all day, out in the glove compartment waiting for me, was a half a pint of hot vodka. Hot vodka is the best, isn't it? And we'd just lie there in the glove compartment and say, "Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling." You know? And I'd get in that car, you know, my nerves would be hanging out the ends of my fingers. "This, your hair looks a lot like his." "I just noticed you, Bill." "Betty, he's going to take me to the airport, so shut up, Cliff." "You notice how careful I'm being with Al-Anons, too." Tomorrow. But you know, I would get in the car and the nerves would be hanging out the ends of my fingers. My brain would be too big for my head. Every muscle in my body would just be knotted. And I'd open up that hot vodka, you know, whatever Thrifty had in the basket that week. Like those big nickel cigars I smoked in those days, and I'd just say, blah, 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 blah. Always drank half the half pint. Oh, is there anything like hot vodka? It just goes, boop, 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 you know. And the nerves would, like, you know, the brain subsided. Puff on that cigar, huh? Damn, you're a good coach. And I'd sit in the dark in that car and let that booze work and finish that cigar in my old 58 Chevy, my surfing car that her father gave us. Wouldn't have had it otherwise. And I'd have my 8 minutes, huh? There, all alone in the darkness of that car, I would have my 8 minutes. And just before I'd reach over to turn on the key to start home, I'd think about that gray-haired son of a bitch down in San Diego. Always gave him about 3 minutes. And then I went home and destroyed my family. And we were all nuts when we got here. Every time I hear the ABCs, I always put the word family in there. You know? No human power could have relieved my family. Oldest son is working his way to a cash salesman. Didn't have to give him any spending money. You know? Used to hit him up for filth about once a week. Yeah, what do you need, Dad? You know, he had hair down to his butt, you know, and his headband was too tight, and he... Call his mother, man. Hey, man, what's for dinner? Took LSD like it was popcorn, you know. They're spooky, those guys, you know. I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, what was that? I'd say, I don't know what. What was it? Where? What? I wasn't that good myself, you know. And if you want to really hear what that family was like, I wasn't there, right? You come and hear my Al-Anon tomorrow. What a zoo that was. It was a zoo. And I knew if I could get rid of them, I could drink like a gentleman again, you know. One guy said, Jack Parr said, it's like they tipped the world and everything loose rolled to Southern California. I think Sheridan hung onto a bush, I'll tell you for sure. But I built that speech team. I destroyed my family. You could not get any... seven goofier goofs in the history of the world. All crazy people. But I built the speech team. Isn't that the way we are? We're dying of a terminal disease, and we're doing all this stuff. After a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. I know when it's time. The next year, there were like 12, 14 tournaments. 30, 40 schools in each tournament. We took first place in every single tournament. Huh? I can wait. I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament, and my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy, and I put my nose right against his, and I said, do you know where Oceanside is now? And he just looked blank. He said, what are you talking about? I said, don't you remember about 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, Oceanside, where's that? He said, well, we just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was. Sounds like you, doesn't it, huh? You know, I'm from the other side of the country. Just the opposite corner of the country. And you go, yeah! That's why the steps work. At some level, we're all the same, huh? We're all exactly the same at some level. Of course, we're all different, too. Jerry hopes he's different than me, you know. And that's why we have the traditions. Because we're all different. We are unique. And that's... our traditions keep us unique and protect us from each other and from ourselves. But that's the way I was. That's the way I lived. You know what? And when I live like that, I have to drink like that. And when I drink like that, I have to live like that. And I don't have to live like that anymore. I don't have to live like that anymore because I have 12 steps and I have a program and I have love and I love. So I don't ever have to live that way again if I don't want to. And I don't want to. I like being here with you. And right after that, Pat and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Remember that? Oh, he's carrying the clothes back in now. Remember he carried them out last... There he's going back in again. And I threatened to move out, and they all said, yeah, go for it! Woo! I'm living down at the beach where I wanted to live anyway, I always said. And I went by the house one afternoon, and I was haranguing Pat about something, and the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background. humming a tune from the planet Pluto. And I did something real stupid. I turned to him and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? He looked me right in the eye, which he hardly ever did. And he said, it's beautiful. And that was my bottom. I didn't even know it for an hour or so, but it was my bottom. I went back to that dump on the beach and I sat and watched the sunset. Still to this day, the most beautiful one I ever saw. And about the time that the sun was going down into the water, I had what our big book calls that moment of clarity, huh? That moment in our lives that, well, we just open up. We're willing to see what we really are. And it's God's grace. It's a gift. It's free. But you can't have it until you surrender. And my sponsor is a guy named John A. Nowadays, you've heard him talk. He's a Swede, you know. One of the things he says all the time, he says, we are the luckiest people on the face of the earth. Because, as he says, we have a chance. He means chance, but we have a chance. And that's true. Most of us are dying out there today. Most of us. What, 99 out of 100 probably. And we're the one out of the 100 that's in this room, alive, with a chance. Because for a moment I opened my mind and my heart and my soul and let the power come in. I left the grace and I was willing to see myself for what I was. And I went in the bedroom and dug out this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I had read in my travels through the program. And being an English teacher, I thought it was very poorly written. Read a lot better this time. I read that book for 3 days and three nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. I ate a little tiny bit and I slept some. And I read that book. I read it cover to cover. Read all the stories. If you're new, I read all the stories. And in the second edition, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. And he was another egotistical school teacher. And he rang my bell. And on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again, the third time through the book. And for those of you who are new on page 62, there's a little prayer, which is step 3, the formal terms of surrender. And in my befuddled, confused condition, it seemed like it would be a good idea if I would kneel down on that filthy linoleum floor on that dump on the beach, and if I would just read that prayer out loud to myself. And I read, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as You will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And when I was new, I looked up the word bondage. It means slavery. Relieve me of the bondage of self. I suffer from a disease of self-obsession. That is the nature of my disease. How am I today? Are you okay? Oh yeah, I don't know, it's not good. They're all out to, you know, I suffer from a disease of self-obsession. And Alcoholics Anonymous has provided me the wherewithal to get out of myself part of the time. To learn to love and be loved, which is a beautiful theme of this thing, huh? And on my knees that morning, I had a spiritual experience. I had a quiet knowledge that I was going to be all right. A higher power came into my life. I knew that it was over, that I was all right. I was not in charge of my life anymore. And that power has been in charge of my life since that day. And I really don't very little about God. I know God intimately, but I don't know anything about God, nor do I need to. I know two real, true things about God. Jim was talking about that this morning, too. My God loves to hear us laugh. That just tickles the heck out of Him, I'm sure. When we're laughing together, huh? Alcoholics and Al-Anons together, with our head back, with the tears running down our face, with our bellies hurting, screaming with laughter. That's when He comes and whispers in my ear and says, it's going to be all right, Cliff. I'll tell you, the only thing lonelier and more terrible in the world than to be a person like me is to be somebody who loves a person like me. And when we're laughing together, oh, I love laughter at all costs. That heals us, doesn't it? It just heals us.
Well, we got our heads back laughing. I love it. We take new little Al-Anons to AA speaker meetings. That's a lot of fun.
Well, she's cruel, too. You know, and the speaker's up here and he says, "And I fell in the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents." You know, we're all going, "Yeah." This new little Al-Anon's going, "Nothing funny about that." We just take her to another meeting, you know. And one night she throws her head back and laughs. And I don't care if you're Al-Anon or AA. I don't care which. If you're new and we get you laughing, you're screwed. It's all over now. Because when you're laughing, you're identifying. See what I mean? I love it when at some conventions, you know, they bring in Lithium Row right along here, you know, with the bracelets, you know. And I'll tell you, they get laughing too. There's always a couple of them that start to laugh and catch themselves. They go, you know, because they'll belong if they laugh, you know. So as soon as the meeting's over, I run down and say, "You want to hear it again?" That, you know, the laughter heals us. And, you know, and if you're new and you're going to meetings where nobody's laughing, go to some other meetings. You know, because like Jim said, God told him, of course, that's an Al-Anon God, fun. My God says, "Have fun." That night I showed up at old Bill Blake's house. He was a little electrician there in Oceanside. An AA fanatic. Little Nazi. Oh, vicious, rotten, cruel little man. He was my sponsor. Never asked me if I wanted him. I never asked him if he wanted me. I just showed up. The same night, 13th of January, 1970. I'm standing on that porch. It's dark, cold, and I'm alone. I am alone. I have no family. I don't really think there was anybody that wanted anything to do with me. And the door opened, and Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door, and my life started over. You know, I told you what a loser I was. Arrogant, overeducated, pompous jerk. I have never seen anybody so glad to see me in my life as Margie was. I mean, the lady just went, "Oh, Cliff!" Oh, in the house I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. She said, "Oh, this is so wonderful." She said, "Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. Oh, God, this is so nice." You know, and Bill comes home about 10 minutes later. He sees me at the table. He goes, "Oh, God, Dad! Cliff!" You know, in about a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? I'll be glad to help any way I can. Cliff's here. We can start AA now. I've never forgotten that. I've never forgotten. You know, I was so sick that I would have known if they were lying. They were not lying. They were delighted for me. They'd been praying for me for 5 years. But Bill and Margie were more delighted for Bill and Margie, because they knew the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous, the great secret. You can't have it unless you give it away. You can't keep this thing if you don't give it away. And they gave it away better than anybody I've ever known. And that's the lesson I've learned, and that's the lesson I do. I give it away whenever I can. And that was the last nice thing the man ever said to me. Pat loved him because he was so cruel to me. I think the nicest thing he said the next 5 years was, "Shut up." Shut up to me? Now, the third night, I had the whips. I never shook, but things would just fly, you know. Nobody wanted to drink coffee around me in the meeting, you know, because I'd be just sitting there like, "What?" And he got me in the car, and we're going to L.A. He had air conditioning, big, what was it, Continental he drove. I liked that, you know. And I'm in the front seat with him, and we're going down the freeway, windows all closed, air conditioning on. So he gets right up beside a semi's engine, a big semi-truck, and he opens my window. Oh, jeez. Ceiling seat. He goes, "Ha, ha, love to watch those newcomers jump." Of course, I've been glad to pass it on through the years, you know. I love these new cocaine heads. They're the more fun than the old ones, you know what I mean? They're so quick. You get them like that, they look like those little birds at the beach, you know. I like to wait till they get a cup of coffee and start for their chair, and then I come up behind them and say, "Hey, I..." My buddy Al, he goes and gets their coffee, puts it on the table, and then he fills it. Mm-hmm. Right to the top. Now the guy's got to make a decision. I got a great one, though. I got a new one. I sat next to this new cocaine guy at the meeting about this size, and I sat right in beside him. Just as the meeting was starting, I said, "Was that guy looking in the window looking at you?" He didn't quit moving the whole So we love newcomers, don't we? They're so much fun. And old Bill was just, I remember about the fifth, sixth week I was sober, he was screaming and yelling at me right in my face. He used to get right in my face. And I couldn't think of anything else to say, so I said, "Well, I have degrees, you know." And he says, "So does the thermometer. You know where they stick that sometimes, don't you?" He was so cruel. You know, my father is dead, my mother's dead, and my sister's dead, but no death ever affected me as much as the death of that little man. He'd been dead now 5 years, I guess, 4. And I miss him. Every day of my life, I've missed that little man. But he's around. He's here. No doubt in my mind. He's going, "You silly ass." He says, "You silly ass." But out where I walk, there's a blackbird follows me. Big crow. And he flies up and he gets on a wire up ahead of me. And then when I get there, he goes, "Ah, ah, 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 ah." I say, "Okay, Bill, I'm going tonight, for God's sake." Now, I have a wonderful sponsor now I mentioned, John Ackerland. He's a wonderful, loving man, very different than Bill. John's always kissing you. I hate that. "Oh, Keith, I love you." I really like it, but I pretend like I don't. But Bill, when Bill was dying in the hospital, and he had emphysema, if you guys like to go out there and smoke. Terrible way to die. And he was in, he looked like a Buchenwald victim lying in the bed there, you know, with that little thing. And I said, "I was going to Alaska, up to Ketchikan." I said, "I'm going up to Ketchikan, Alaska to talk, Bill." And I didn't know if it was the last time I ever see him. And he said, "Yeah, they called me." He said, I told him to send you as far away as possible." Right to the end. You know. But he believed that it's not what you think, it's not what you feel, and not what you study, you know, it's what you do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And he showed me the big book of Alcoholics, and he said there's 12 ways to find a new life. And since you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. 1, 2. And he told me that the big book was a very important book that could be read by anyone with an 8th grade reading level. It could be read and understood by any competent 8th grader. That I did not need a guru to lead me through it. That I did not need anyone to explain it to me. That we did not need any David Koresh's in AA. That it's a self-help book that anyone can understand and do, and that the actions that are indicated in the book is what will save my life. And all my life, we were talking about love and be loved. I knew what my problem was my whole life, didn't you? My problem has always been, I was not loved enough. And I wasn't. Of course, I didn't know there isn't enough for somebody like me. You know what I mean? I mean, if you got everybody in the world, all the people in China, everywhere, said, "Let's love Cliff." I'd say, "Is that it? Is that all?" See, but the little wino, he knew. He knew my problem had always been I had never loved enough. He knew my problem had always been I never loved at all. And I did not know how to start to learn how to love. So he did what every intelligent sponsor I've ever seen does. He made me take loving actions. He made me do loving things against my will. I didn't want to.
He used to make me stand at the door and greet newcomers. God, I hate that. I'm a snob. Hi there. I'm Cliff. What's your name? Like I really give a... you know? And he sponsored a whole bunch of us, you know? And if a newcomer put his hand up, we used to tear him limb from limb. I'm new. Give him here. It's mine. No, God. You know? And he took with me within all these 12-step calls until I could do it myself. But mostly, there was this guy, Al, who was a worse loser than me. He was slipping 10 years, and I'd only slipped 5. And he was a butt. He was awful, blowhard. And we were having problems at our house. Pat hadn't gone to Al-Anon yet and had a mean mouth. And these kids were all, you know, and a crazy place. So I would have nervous breakdowns, and I'd go to my sponsor's house. You know what they're doing over there? And he would listen. You know how they listen? And I would finally run down, you know. He'd say, why don't you go get Al and take him to the meeting? What's that got to do with a nervous breakdown? That's what I'd like to know. And then he'd just look at me. So I'd go get Al. And I'd drive him to the meeting, listen to his BS all blah, 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 blow hard. We get the meeting, set the meeting up, make the coffee. Everybody come to the meeting. Everybody go home. Al and I'd set the meeting down, wash the coffee pots, had real cups. Al had to wash. He was so shaky, he just put his hands in the water, you know. But I could dry. You know. When you're new, you got to feel better than somebody. You know. And I'd load old Al in the car and start driving him up. Blah, 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 blah. And I'd let Al off, and I'd start driving home, and something would happen to me. This feeling would come over me. Better than the 8 minutes ever was. I didn't know what it was, and it never lasted very long. And I was sober, oh, maybe 2 years before I finally knew what the feeling was. It's the feeling of being enough. Do you know what I mean? I have never been enough of anything in my life. Ever. Any time. And for like 30 or 40 seconds, I would feel like I was enough. Of course, I used to think I felt good because I got rid of Al. You know. And then, you know, Al had another slip about a year later, and I went to help him. He was crying. And he was, gee, you know, he just was destroyed. And I was trying to help him. You know, I said, hey, it's one day at a time, Al. You can get started again. And out of my mouth, I said, I love you, Al. And I knew it was true. I knew I wanted that man to be sober as much as I wanted to be sober myself. And he got sober. And he's still my friend today. And he's still sober today. And he and I became this primo 12-step team. We were magnificent, if I do say so myself. We were the best 12-step team maybe in the history of AA. I don't know. We would do the good guy, bad guy. Take turns. You ever do that? You know, the one guy say, you're going to shut your goddamn mouth and quit whining. Get your ass to the meeting. The other guy said, never mind him. Come here. We were magnificent. We sobered up the world and stayed sober ourselves in the meantime. And I learned to love those newcomers. Learned to love newcomers. One night Clancy said, treat your kids like newcomers. What a concept. So I told God, you want the kids? Take the kids! And he did. And Pat will tell you a lot more about our kids tomorrow if you hear her. But our youngest son has 6 years in sobriety. Our middle daughter, who was the most disturbed of all, has about 7 years. And she's just a goer and a doer, and she sponsors all these beautiful young honeys. Oh, it's wonderful. And she was the secretary of our home group. Our oldest daughter kind of went wrong. She's been in Al-Anon about 12 years. Well, what are you going to do? You know, in our family, just when we get together, you know, the contrast between that old insanity, we get together, we just have a ball. Everybody loves everybody else for fun and for free. We don't get together that much, but most of them live in our area. The hashish salesman lives in Hawaii and Maui, on the beach in Hawaii, poor devil. He just was made vice president of the company, and he drinks, and he's having some problems with it. I sent him a big book, and he called back and said, I don't like religion. I said, better read it again, Dave. But I was over there on my fourth AA birthday. My son said to my friend Keith, he said, my dad has shown me how to live. That's the best compliment I ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't say my dad told me how to live or my dad taught me how to live. He said, my dad has shown me how to live. He meant I was an example of the power in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the best compliment I ever had, because that's all I'll ever be. That's all you'll ever be, as an example of the power in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. And I'm not talking about somebody who's married to an alcoholic. I'm talking about somebody who works the Al-Anon program, who works the steps. You know, they took our steps. They won't put our book in, but... I think Pat described that Lois came down from a mountain with the steps on it. On these stone tablets. I said, huh? Oh, the only help our family's ever had is Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, and that's all we've ever needed. I could probably use more, but... You know, that black ball, it's not gone. Just a little BB down in there. But it reminds me from time to time that it's there. I never knew what the name of the black ball was all those years that it tortured me. And I was sober on a second inventory of 2 years sobriety, and I found out what the name of it was. The name is fear. And when I was drinking, if you'd have told me that it was, one of us would have had to die, because I was macho. And I sponsor these guys. You know, the more macho they are, the more afraid they are. And when the day comes when they can see their fear and recognize it and deal with it, then they become happy, joyous, and free. And that's what happened to me. Getting rid of that black ball, because it's not gone. I'm not a recovered alcoholic. If you are, splendid. Good for you. But I am not. The black ball will always have a little BB down there. And if I don't do what I'm supposed to do, over a period of time, it'll get bigger and bigger. And someday, my brain will say, hey, Cliff, remember the 8 minutes. And I will be gone and I will be dead. But I don't think that'll have to be. The great Jewish theologian Martin Buber said, there's only two emotions in the world. There's only two. There's love and there's fear. Then he said, they cannot coexist. You can't have both at the same time. So loving you and being loved has dissolved the black ball. And so if you're new, I want to tell you this. You don't have to believe this about yourself. Of course you don't. You can still think it's about not drinking. I want to tell you, I live almost every day of my life happy and joyous and free. A sick, goofy nut like me lives most every day of his life happy and joyous and free. And I hope you do too.